The Reserve Pool, Episode 2, Churn. Hello everybody, welcome back to The Reserve Pool, a podcast about Marvel Dice Masters and the people who love to play it. I am Dave, and joining me once again is Katie. How are things on your end, Katie?
Doing pretty well today.
Good, good to hear it. Now we have one other introduction to make. You have read his blog posts, you've seen his ideas. Now it's time to introduce Evan. Hello, Evan, how are you?
Quite good. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. Well, we're happy to have you. We have the whole team together now, and that's pretty cool. But, Evan, why don't you give everyone a little bit of background on you and gaming and Dice Masters and, you know, Evan. Who is the real Evan?
A big gamer. I pretty much got started with gaming when I was about 4 or so with the Atari 2600. I know that's dating myself, but there you go. I got pretty heavily into board games. My father was a pretty heavy board gamer himself. Did a lot of like historical wargaming when he was younger. When I was around 9, 10 or so, I got into this weird little card game called Magic, and that sort of...
Magic, what's that?
Yeah, no one's ever heard of it, I know. But yeah, I got it back into it just when it was starting to actually pick up, and that sort of got me a lot of respect for collectible games. And yeah, pretty much went through there, and actually recently I've been going through a bit of a revival with board games and so on, and I'd been hearing things about Quarriors, and then I heard something about Marvel dice game that was sort of based off it, and I was like, well, I like Marvel stuff, and Quarriors seemed neat from what I'd heard about it, so I gave this a try, and I was really pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it's an easy one to get hooked into. I don't think you have to worry about Atari dating yourself. My very first game was Asteroids on my grandma's Atari 2600, and man, I loved that. That was awesome. Blew me away when I was, you know, 2 or 3.
Yeah, Demon Attack for me, which was sort of like Space Invaders, but a little more mobile.
Okay, I gotcha. I haven't played that one, but now I'm going to have to look and see... And see that I would like something a little more mobile than classic Space Invaders. Of course, on Atari, I mean, nothing was really all that mobile, right?
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, it was the monsters moved around as opposed to sat in a giant formation and went back and forth.
Right. Exactly. So, well, cool. Well, Evan, we're glad to have you aboard here. And actually, you speaking of yourself and board gaming, I guess you're pretty heavily into things right now. You mentioned that today, our recording day, later on, you have a board gaming meetup you're going to, correct?
Yep. Yeah, I'll be playing... Well, I don't actually know what I've been playing. I wound up missing the last couple of sessions, so I don't know what new stuff is going on lately, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you'll have to tell us about it. All right, well, everybody, we would like to thank you so much for the great reception so far to the blog and to the podcast. We have had kind words from just about all over the place. We want to thank you. So please subscribe to us on iTunes. Use our RSS feed. We have it all available for you. If you'd like to support us, of course, we'd love to see some of those reviews on iTunes. We'll be happy to read the 5-star ones on the show or just give you props as whoever you are who leaves it. There's also a little website that you may have heard of called Board Game Links. Board Game Links is a website where people get to, they just click a little heart by the names of various board gaming websites or board games themselves or all sorts of different outlets. Game stores are on there too. And as they move up in the rankings, you know, they're good. And we've actually had a little bit of movement there. We have 15 votes, which is good enough to have us in around the 130s, which is not bad considering we started out at 300 with one vote. And yeah, so I don't know. Have you guys heard of this site before?
I actually hadn't. I'm actually sort of new to the board gaming social media thing. A little bit of a social media Luddite myself, but...
That's fair. Well, yeah, it's there, and if you want to click the little heart by us, it'll help move us up and get a little bit of visibility. We want to just help everything, you know, everything we can do to help grow the community and to be good citizens of the community we want to do. And finally, Twitter, @TheReservePool. Check us out there. We'll try and keep it pretty solid with articles that we have going up so you don't miss anything. And, of course, just random thoughts and opinions about Dice Masters and gaming in general will be there. I'm also thinking about working on a Board Game Geek Guild page for the show, just if you want to show support there. We'll try and link some things to that as well, if I end up getting it off the ground. I don't have a lot of experience with that. So, all right, I'm talking way too much, guys. How about, let's hear from you. Any recent games of Marvel Dice Masters?
Well, Evan and I play actually a good bit together, and we played the other day, and I think that was where both of us, separate and apart from each other, decided to try Angel, the Avenging Angel version of him, just to see how he would work out. And, I mean, obviously the rest of the cards were less exciting or new to us, but that was an interesting one that we try to play each other and work on different meta ideas and see how it goes. So we did that one.
And how did you find Avenging Angel to work out?
He's pretty interesting. I think what he does, if he's not knocked out while blocking, he deals 2 damage to your opponent. And so it means you can't chump block him. You can't just say, oh, I'll block him with a sidekick and call it a day. It means that your opponent really has to bring a beefier blocker to block him, which, you know, means something else might get through that they would have otherwise liked to block or such. It's an interesting balance card to make your opponent think twice about how he or she is going to be blocking.
Yeah, I've been intrigued by that one myself. Well, how about you, Evan?
Full disclosure, I didn't actually wind up buying any Avenging Angels during the game. Deck I was trying out, I was really there to see how Gambit works in the in actual play, as opposed to me sort of looking at his rather high over average feeling cost and sort of shaking my head. So I tried acing the whole Gambit, which I'm not sure was a good thing. I might have wanted to go with his own common, which costs more but has a generally more powerful fielding ability. But I was actually pretty happy with him overall. It's not bad being able to, you know, just go into your die bag and grab a random die and, you know, roll it, and maybe you'll get some energy, or maybe you got a character that same turn. I certainly love that coming from Nog, Norman Osborn, Green Goblin.
Right, and I know you're a big fan of him, and I'm sure we'll talk about him later. I know you've had some efficiency questions with Gambit. To me, it's just as important to cycle dice faster as it is to play the energy curve a little bit. But again, I think we'll probably talk about that a little later. Myself, a lot of my playing in the last week or so has been some learning games with friends and others, trying to perhaps evangelize a little bit for Marvel Dice Masters. And everybody who I've played with it has pretty much liked it, except for my little brother. And that was the first one that I taught. And I think the problem is really that the learning game as it is in the book is pretty bad. So what I'm trying to do, and I'm going to have a whole post on this in the coming week, what I'm trying to do is maybe just play the learning game through a couple of turns, just so everybody gets an idea of the mechanics, and then we try to do something a little bit bigger, using just starter set characters, maybe 4 to a side, 2 dice per card, the same 3 basic actions as in the learning game, and maybe sort of drafting which characters you want on each side. So, like, you wouldn't just draft, like, a specific Iron Man. You would draft all of the Iron Mans and then decide which one you wanted to use. And that's worked a lot better because it gives you a much fuller idea of the game and a few more of the abilities. But, man, the learning game as it is in the book does nothing at all to really illustrate the potential that the game has. My brother is willing to try it again, luckily, but he was kind of turned off by it. So I really don't recommend that anybody use that, at least not through to completion.
Yeah, I mean, I always found that their character choices are sort of lopsided. Taking probably the worst human torch against Mutate 666 is, you know, one of the worst cards you can get, one of the best cards you can get.
Well, I have to say, I like that Human Torch a little bit. And the reason being is that it only costs 2 to purchase. Its fielding cost is not bad. When you compare it to, for example, the common Ghost Rider, right? It's a 2-cost die. It has no abilities, but it has one of the highest fielding costs in the game. so it doesn't really bring a whole lot to the table. This Human Torch is a good way to kind of be a little bit energy efficient, give you some chance at getting some decent lightning energy early on in the game, I think. And then if you decide to field him, not going to break the bank the way that Ghost Rider is going to do for you.
Yeah, Ghost Rider, full disclosure, Ghost Rider is one of my favorite Marvel characters, but ever since I tried him, I'm like, yeah, a cheap die that, you know, is pretty strong, and then the first time I used him, I realized, wow, his fielding cost just completely defeats any real use he has for a speed character.
Exactly.
I had some pretty good luck. Obviously, I have a more complete set of the cards, but my opponent, I just asked her, you know, who are some of your favorite characters? And I provided her with one of the stronger versions of Mr. Fantastic, his common, actually, since I don't have his super rare. And she really liked the game just from getting more attached to the card character who she was into rather than me just using the starter kit. But again, that's a luxury that I have since I have not a complete set, but a lot more cards than somebody would have just from the starter set.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. All right, well, now with these new episodes that we're going through here, we're going to be trying out a couple of different segments. So let's try out one of those right now. And now, let's take a look in the reserve pool mailbag and see what our listeners have to say. All right, so our first new segment, as you may have discerned from the intro for it, is the reserve pool mailbag. It's pretty straightforward. We'd love to hear any questions that you have, any kind of correspondence that you'd like to keep up, and you can send that to mailbag@thereservepool.com. The way that this happened is that a fellow named Joe sent us a note, and guys, he feels that he got into the game a little later than others, and he wants to be going into organized play, but he only has a few rares and no super rares, and they're really is just not the opportunity around him to purchase anymore. He has a full set of commons and uncommons, and he wants to know how to make a solid squad that can win and hold its own against some of the major archetypes out there. I know we've kicked this around a little bit. You both have a few ideas. Why don't we start out with you, Katie?
All right. I think the big things that I really like, especially in organized play, depending on what your local store is going to be doing, there are some semi-hybrid or semi-constructed version where you only bring four cards rather than a full eight. And again, the advice is a little different depending on what your local store has decided to do. And for me, if you're only bringing four characters, I love Storm. She's right there in the starter set, and she's going to knock out or knock off a lot of the characters that your opponent is trying to accrue to build those combos. For example, Gabi relies on keeping those sidekicks out. Storm can knock them all away, force you to re-roll them, and then they're gone, and you're not doing any damage with Gabi if Gabi is able to come out. That's a big one. And I just also like Human Torch, both Flame On and Johnny Storm. Both of those do, you know, the nice little picking. I did a blog post on Torch and Hulk. I think it's a really good team up to bring, especially if you've only got four cards. And just a little cheat, Joe specifically said he had Loki Gem Keeper as one of his rares. And Joe, you should be using that.
Absolutely.
So for Joe in particular, use your Loki, bring him. He's going to help you solve a lot of these problems. But for other people who don't have the opportunity to use Loki Gem Keeper, the one that keeps your opponent from being able to field characters or field one character while he's out, you want to be using him if you have him. But Torch and Storm are good common, uncommon answers to big questions, especially Storm for Gabi decks. Cannot emphasize that one enough.
Yeah, that's some solid advice there. What do you think, Evan?
Well, just good that Katie brought up that a lot of store, which will be running the sealed deck constructed, where you only get to pick four cards. From what I've seen looking at the WizKids site and reading their organized play guidelines, it sounds like they're actually going to be pushing that largely. So it is quite likely you're going to be limited to 4 cards, which I think compresses your choices a little and unfortunately means you probably only really get 1, maybe 2 cards to bring to counter other things. So it makes you have to juggle this a little more. I do like Mutate 666 as a general defensive card. It handles both Sarina and Gabi very nicely. As you wind up, you know, Sarina, you wind up spinning him down and you get, you know, even more dice out of him, or actually better dice choice out of him. And against the Gabi deck, he will block Gabi without actually killing him and you get more dice. So it's a win-win there. As for dealing with the actual sidekicks for Gabi, I like Reed Richards' rival, Dr. Doom. His blanket -1/-1 to non-villains won't affect Gabi, unfortunately, but it will instantly kill all sidekicks and prevent your opponent from fielding more, which kind of completely neuters the Gabi deck. And for Serena's, that means one of her faces, she just comes in and dies, which, unlike some of the other Black Widows, means she won't actually get a chance to do anything horrible to you. So that can help. And he actually combos nicely into a few other cards, which I think Katie's going to be posting an article on soon.
Yes. It's very possible. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I think I can echo a lot of this. Mutate 666 is a great one to bring just because it helps you and it provides a solid blocker. That's one that we're going to be seeing a lot of. I myself like Avengers and Human Torch, supported by Common Nick Fury. You're going to have to juggle how you want some of these to work if it is indeed going to be the one where the format where you only bring, you know, 4 with you. At the same time, if you have trouble staying alive and you're not sure about that Serena rush, you can always try to play with Beast, Genetic Expert. And that's the one where if Beast is knocked out while blocking, you gain 1 life. And with the burst, your opponent also takes 2 damage. So if you're seeing a lot of Serena, you're going to be able to spin down Beast. His burst is on level 1, so you're going to be able to spin him down. You're going to be able to avoid that life loss from Serena by spinning him down. You're gonna block with him, and so he's going to die. So you'll get to gain a life, and then with the burst, your opponent will also take 2 damage. So if you feel like you're having trouble staying alive with that, a wall of Beast Genetic Experts could be a bit intimidating and might be a good answer for Serena.
Yeah, I think my only feelings about that is, while that is a very good option, you do lose out on the die drawing, and against decks that aren't Serena, he becomes slightly less useful as he's not going to spin down as much.
Yeah, this is true. And I think that if you're going to use him, you need to have an alternative method for kicking your dice around. So, I think that these things are going to help you, Joe. Please let us know if you have any other questions. And again, everybody, please, mailbag@thereservepool.com. All right, so our feature topic for this week, first I should explain, some weeks we're going to be doing a little bit of a round-robin discussion like we did with the meta-defining cards, but this week we're going to do more of a strategic roundtable, and today we're talking about churn. Now, I think the first thing we want to do for everybody, because we all have a different way of talking about this, I myself didn't really refer to it as churn until I started talking with Katie and Evan, let's define churn for everybody. Evan, do you want to take this?
Yeah, I see churn as, to a degree, the idea of getting more dice into your pool, but really focused on the idea that you want to be constantly taking the dice you've put out, attacking with them, getting them killed, getting them back into your prep area so you can roll more and more dice, do more and more things, be it field lots of characters, buy your if looks could kill Cyclops, you know, spend all those lovely energy you're getting, and just in general accelerate what's happening. And just the process of that, the idea that this is a big cycle and that you don't want to be just rolling or picking out your 4 dice from your die bag, rolling, doing what you can with that, and calling it a day every turn, that you want to constantly be putting things in and taking things out and putting things in and taking things out, like, you know, churning, basically.
Yeah, That's an awfully good way to describe it. I think there are a lot of different comparisons we can make for it, but it really is the importance of the constant just cycling through your dice bag, because the more you can do that, the more you're going to get the dice that you need, the more you're going to get the energy that you need, and really the better off you're going to be long term throughout the game. So if you can do things to impact your turn in a positive way, you're going to help yourself win. And right now, a lot of Dice Masters is about speed, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really what I'm feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's why we need it. Now, I want to make two comparisons here. The first is the collectible card game comparison. And I think quite simply, this is just anytime you have the ability to draw a few extra cards, tutor something out, anything like that, anything that's going to impact your ability to get through your deck more efficiency, or more efficiently, rather, is very, it's at least relatable to the concept of churn here. Is that fair to say?
I would definitely agree. I think, you know, the more dice or the more cards, if we're going in CCG, that you have, the more options you have. It's as simple as that. The more you have, the more options you have.
Correct. Now, I think that the other comparison that we want to make is to deck building games, and I mean games along the lines of Dominion and Ascension. This is really where the better example, I think, really comes in, because, and I've said this before and I'll continue to say it, this game is much less like a CCG and much more like one of those games, and rightfully so. It's based on Quarriors, which was also, it's a deck-building game, but with dice instead of cards. That's where this game gets its mechanisms from. And in those sorts of games, the faster you can cycle through your deck, the more you're seeing those more powerful cards. And additionally, the more cards that are not useful to you anymore that you can take out of circulation, again, the more efficient your deck is going to be. So for me, churn really comes down to a lot of deck efficiency. And deck building games are very much about that engine building. So in this game, you're going to have those cards that, as the game goes on, lose value, like the sidekicks. You're going to have those cards that you need to get out there, like, you know, perhaps if Looks Could Kill Cyclops. And you're going to have those cards that aid you in doing that. And one of them, of course, the classic example, is Beast Mutate 666. So that's a great way to transition into what are the best ways to get some churn going on?
Well, for me, definitely, I mean, you got to say it, Beast 666, when he blocks, you draw a die. If he's got his burst available, you draw two and pick one, which is great, actually, because it lets you pass over a die that you're maybe less excited about in order to take one that you're a little more excited about, which definitely helps. I think that's a big one. And I'd say another one of my favorites, personally, is Nova Quasar, the common version of Nova, which each time Nova takes damage, you may draw one die and put it in your prep area. I love him. He costs five bolt energy, and he's got some really nice stats, so I'm a big fan of him.
Oh, yeah, and he combos pretty well with Human Torch if you want to use him that way.
Yeah, he's pretty disgusting that way. I like him.
Yeah. The best part about Mutate 666, I mean, obviously it's great to put the extra die in your your prep area, but just as important really to me is the die that you get to put in your used pool, because now that's a die that obviously is, at least of the two you picked out, it's less useful if you have the burst here, so you want to get rid of it, and it's not something that's going to come up now in your bag. So the next time you go to reach in for four dice, that's out of circulation, and it's not going to affect you at that time. So it kind of gives you the best of both worlds there. It takes something out of circulation, at least temporarily, plus it gives you something additional in your prep area. And likely, Beast is getting knocked out when he does this, so now you also have a Beast in your prep area, too. Really, really helps put the tempo in your favor.
Yeah, I think the only possible pitfall of that is if you've been doing a really good job culling sidekicks out of your dice bag, then you probably are actually going to be pulling two characters in that case, and then which one do I want to use, which one do I not want to use, and maybe you're actually advancing getting your one or two remaining sidekicks in that case. So, but honestly, that's sort of like, you know, well, you're probably already winning if you're doing such a good job of controlling your die bag, so.
Yeah, if that's happening, that's probably the case. I would agree. What do you like for churn options, Evan? I can guess one of them that you're going to bring up.
Yeah. I'm definitely warming to Gambit. I do think that given his fielding cost is, fielding cost I believe is 112, which is slightly on the expensive side for me, which I guess says a lot about my philosophy towards fielding costs. I think his ability to just grab a die from your bag and roll it and see what happens is potentially very useful. It's pulling something out of your die bag. It can give you that clutch character you need. It can give you some extra energy if that's what you need. I think that rolls really nicely into probably my favorite churn card, which is Norman Osborn Green Goblin, or just simply Nog.
Yes, the unsung hero among Green Goblins, really.
Right. I mean, Gobby gets all the playtime, but I really think Nog is, on the whole, a more powerful card overall.
Oh, unsung villain. Sorry.
Yeah, I definitely, when Evan first brought him out when we were playing, I was like, what are you doing with that? And then I watched it played once, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Norman Osborn Green Goblin is really fantastic. And what he does, when fielded, you may roll up to 2 sidekick dice from your used pile, but not use the ones if you had used a sidekick die to field him. And he also lets you play, for his global, lets you pay 1 bolt energy to knock out one of your sidekick characters and deal 2 damage to a target character. So he can be pretty brutal, and he only costs 4 bolt energy. He's similar to in purchase cost to the common Green Goblin. But what he really does is he lets you grab those sidekicks, probably give yourself another 2 energy or so per turn when you field him, and with a total field cost of only 2, you're likely to have been able to put him out on the cheap, which is really helpful as well. So Nog, the unsung villain of villains, yeah. In both Evan and my opinion.
Yeah, and my opinion as well. I'm with you both there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth noting that in general he's going to be a net positive energy gain for fielding him, or at the very worst, even if you can only get 1 sidekick, it's probably going to be neutral, and you have a better chance of gaining energy than you will losing energy. So that's really nice. On top of that, if you think about his global ability, since that knocks out a sidekick, that's getting you another die for your roll next turn as well.
That's true, if you choose to use it that way. Absolutely. Well, you know, you brought up Gambit. Of course, the 3-cost Ace in the Hole is an attractive option. When fielded, draw and roll 1 die, and the burst is draw 2 dice, roll 1, and return the other to your bag, so you get some choice. But his uncommon form also does a little bit of this, too, and that's when fielded, draw and roll 2 dice. Field characters rolled on those dice for free, place the rest in your used pile. And the burst lets you draw 3 dice, and then you choose 2 to roll and return the other to your bag. And he has burst on 2 faces, so you have a good shot at getting that that burst ability out there, and that gives you, again, a little bit of efficiency and a little bit of the ability to pick what you want to roll. And I like those options. Anything that gives you options.
Yeah, and he actually works better if you've been doing a good job of calling sidekicks out of your dice bag. My only issue, I suppose, with the uncommon one is that he costs 5, which, given Gambit's otherwise fairly weak stats, makes me feel a little bad about spending that much energy to get what is essentially a drawing aid out. But given the power of that drawing aid, I think I really need to go and use it to evaluate it.
Yeah, I think he might be better mid-game. I don't think he's one that you want to get out early. I think he's good for when you've got some sidekicks out in the field, so mostly you're going to be drawing your character dice. And so, one, you have, obviously, these are dice that you want to get out. These are part of your engine, and they're going to help you win. You want those, you know, to be out and in the field. The fact that then that you have, you know, a 50% shot of getting those there, 3 of the, you know, 3 of the 6 faces or characters, you can get them out in the field. You can do it for free. I think he's a good one for mid game. I don't think he's an early game priority for buying.
And just because I've got him in front of me, Gambit's rare, card sharp. What he does is he actually changes a little bit and turns into a direct damage character. When fielded, you may draw and roll 1 die. If you roll a character side, that character deals damage equal to its attack to your opponent and goes to your used pile.
That's right, yeah. Though without getting ahead of ourselves, he might need to be the subject of a future fact talk, and we'll talk about that another time. Well, okay, we've talked about some of the more efficient ways there to help affect your churn. Why don't we move into some of the least efficient ways? The first one that I want to point out here are cards like Human Torch Matchstick, or the Annihilator version of Hulk. These are the cards that allow you to move other dice of that same type from your used pile, and then you roll them or something else like that. For one, like in the case of Human Torch, I know right off the top of my head, that actually doesn't do a whole lot for you because you just get to place it in your reserve pool. You don't actually get to field it for free or anything like that. I don't think these actually help you that much.
I sort of agree. Another one who I'm not a big fan of course, Annihilator Hulk.
Yeah.
Which does very similar. When he's damaged, he allows you to move your Hulks from your used pile to your prep area. Honestly, if you've got two Hulks, you're already winning. You don't need that. And there are so many better options for Hulk than that Annihilator version. Why would you use him?
Oh, yeah. It's six cost. I mean, there's no point. Let's say this. If you're not winning, this isn't going to turn the tide for you. If you're not winning and you are doing this Annihilator Hulk here, then you've mismanaged your resources and you're not going to win even with him, moving to your prep area. I mean, it's too conditional because there's really only a couple of cases where that's actually going to help you with anything. It's a classic win more card. I don't like it.
Yeah. I think the Uncommon Punisher Vigilante is a little better in this respect, as his ability is when he attacks, he lets you pull all Punisher dice from your bag and put them in, I believe it's your used pile.
In your prep area.
In your prep area, yeah. Yes. Which is a little better for pulling things out.
Just one Punisher die.
And your opponent can prevent it by paying 3 life, which is honestly a win-win in my opinion.
Yeah, this I don't mind as much because it gives you the ability to, it gives you the option to tutor something out. But the other side of it is that the max dice that you can have available to purchase for this version of Punisher is just 3.
Yeah.
So, as useful as it can be, there's also a bit of a limiting effect there.
Yeah, and overall, while I think Punisher is a reasonably good die, I think you're probably... I personally find his common version much better, so...
Yeah, me too. We talked about him a little bit last week. I also would like to bring up Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme. This is his common form. 7 cost with a mask in there. And while Doctor Strange is active, you may purchase 1 action die for free during your main step. This is a 7 cost guy. Okay, he gives you something for free, and that's how he impacts turn. And I love the stats on this die. At level 3, he's an 8-9. But 7 cost, the highest possible total fielding cost that we have in this game, and he lets you purchase an action die for free during your main step.
Yeah, no thanks.
No, it's one of the most useless cards in the set.
One other semi-churn card I'd like to bring attention to is the rare Ghost Rider, Brimstone Biker. He kind of churns in that he lets you, when fielded, take a die from your used pile and put it in your prep area. I think the real issue with him, though, is while that's a very nice ability and it actually lets you buy a die and then immediately get it into play the next turn without having to worry about going through your die bag or anything, which can be very strong if you're using it to just put your game winner right into play, basically. He does have the Ghost Rider problem of being a very expensive die, and I think that limits his usefulness there.
Yeah, but you know what? In this case, I think it's worth it. You have the potential to use this multiple times if you're in a position where you need to spin him down to level 1, for example. He's going to be squishy enough that you can cycle him through. You have to pay to get him out, but I think it's worth a couple of energy if I know that I'm getting that one card or that one die that I need, or maybe even 2 if I'm cycling through once or twice. I like him a lot. I'm really glad you brought him up. Yeah, we're back to the useful ones, folks. I'm glad you brought him up.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about him. I've definitely used him to good effect, and I really feel he can, you can use him to get that early thing you really need, and then use him for energy for a while, and then use him at the end when you're really trying to get your power characters on the board the entire time. Maybe even after having them punch your opponent once, and then here they are right back again without you having to build up and go through your die bag to get your used pile back.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's start to wrap this up. Evan, what are your final thoughts, if any, on churn?
Well, I think the one thing we maybe didn't talk about as much regarding churn is the idea of just getting your characters killed and then rolling them again. We focus more on the cards that assist you do that, but everything can help you do that just by getting them killed. I think that's the hidden strength of all these little quick characters, is that they churn really well. You can't churn Hulks so well because, well, it's hard to get them killed, and on top of that, they're really expensive to field, so it's not like, well, I got my three Hulks, I'll roll them, and now I have to spend 9 to get them on the field because they all rolled level 3.
That's a great point. You know, I mean, that's why I talked earlier about how much I think that Human Torch playing with fire has a place over, say, again, the common form of Ghost Rider, just because, you know, Ghost Rider has that fielding cost problem, and Human Torch is a bit cheaper, certainly not a ton cheaper, but cheaper. And he's still the 2-cost die. He still offers the bolt energy and everything else. But he's a guy you could cycle through, and he has the ability to be pumped up a little bit as you field characters. You can get a little bit extra, so +1A, +1D until the end of turn. So that's where I do like him. But yeah, when you're constructing these, you can't just look at, when you're thinking about churn, how much is this die going to cost to purchase and how quickly can I get it out? You also got to look at the ease of fielding, and I think that's really why, in the eyes of just about everyone, a beast really shines. Even if you're not using Mutate 666, he has other forms that are pretty inexpensive. You can get him out, and you're only ever going to pay, the most you're ever going to pay to field him is 1. Yes.
Yes. I've got nothing.
All right. Well, I'll edit that part out. Katie, do you have any final thoughts on churn?
I think for me, I've really got to echo Evan to some extent. When we talk about churn, it's great to talk about these cards that are going to help you put maybe 5 or 6 total dice in your prep area for the next turn. But if you can get your guys killed, that can be awesome. It can be bad, don't get me wrong. But there are certain times when getting your characters killed, either via blocking or via attacking, that's going to really help you. It's going to let you possibly get 2 energy out of them next turn. If they've got a nice on-field cost, it's going to help you put them back out quickly. And I think that's the thing about churn. You need to get your dice out, and a lot of them, you need to evaluate which ones you do want to be killed and which ones you do want to remain kind of your back line, which ones you want to stay out, because that's also a very big, interesting thing. You might want to keep those sidekicks out, not because you're running a gobby deck, but because they're not very energy efficient when you roll them. You might want to keep your Hulk or your Human Torch out because they're awesome when you field other things. But the idea that you want to get your characters out, push them forward, get certain ones of them killed, and then do it all again next turn is very important to get in your game to go very quickly.
Yes, it is. And I want to add into that the fact that if you're coming from a CCG, you don't necessarily see creatures as disposable as the characters are in Marvel Dice Masters. You have to be okay with getting them knocked out because they're going to come back around if you do. That's a very different mindset, I think, for a lot of people to get into if you are coming from really any of the collectible card games that use creatures a la Magic or even Pokemon or some of the others that I'm a lot less familiar with. The only other thing that I wanted to bring up, and this is just from looking at our show notes that we missed this part, is that there is a little bit of a danger to decking yourself here. If you need to draw a die and you can't refill from your used pile, there's literally no dice for you to draw, then you do have to lose 1 life. Now, you gain an energy, but this is per each die that you couldn't draw. So if you needed to draw 2 and you couldn't, then you would actually lose 2 life, but you'd gain 2 energy. Now, I do wonder how this interacts with the cards that let you, like, draw 2, pick 1. If you would gain an energy for the die that you have to shove aside at the end. But nonetheless, that is a danger, and it's not really something you want to get into. Luckily, a lot of the cards that help with churn and a lot of the creatures in general, they don't cost a ton. So if you're using Beast, if you're using Black Widow, if you're using any of these, you can get a lot of them for cheap, and that should help stave off that danger.
Yeah, I'll be perfectly honest. The last game I ran with Ghost Rider, Brimstone Biker, Silver Surfer Sentinel, who lets you draw an additional die if you have him out and you've got less life than your opponent. and also has a global that allows you to draw by paying life. I also had beat Mutate 666 and Ace in the whole gambit. And despite drawing a pretty obscene number of cards through all of that, I did not deck myself one. So I really think, unless you're playing basically a Gabi deck where you're not really buying that many dice and you're hoarding your sidekicks and not getting them back into your dice bag, I think unless you're doing that, you're probably not going to deck yourself.
Good point by you. All right, so that's Churn. If you have any comments or questions, please comment on the blog post. Again, send us a letter at mailbag@thereservepool.com. Let's move on and talk about these crazy, crazy rules. All right, so once again, we bring you an edition of Fact Talk. And this time we're going to talk, since there's three of us, we're just going to talk about one card and maybe trash it just a little bit here. Another week, another organized play basic action card. And in this case, that card is Rally. Now, if you haven't seen what this is, I'll try to put a link in the show notes so that you can see it on the blog. But this is the new basic action card. It costs 3 to purchase. And move up to two sidekicks from your used pile to the field is the ability. And with the double burst, move 3 sidekicks instead. Now, my problem with this, and I think what led you guys to want to put this on here as well, is the fact that it specifies sidekicks and not sidekick dice.
Yeah, it's just really confusing. I think it leads to a lot of questions. How exactly are you getting these sidekicks? Every other card that lets you, you know, draw from used or draw from your bag mentions that you need to roll those dice. And then upon rolling them, you need to see what happens. And then you can either, you know, field them for free or they remain as you've rolled them in the first place. Do you just take these straight out of the used pile, flip them to the appropriate little sidekick side and field them? Or what exactly is happening there? I think that's the intent of this card, but it's really confusing, yet again, not making it clear exactly how these dice are moving around and how you're using them.
Correct, because, I mean, if these go into the field, well, one, do they have to have gone into the used pile as a sidekick, or is it just a sidekick die? I imagine, too, that it is intended to be a sidekick die. But the other side of that is, do these count as being fielded? Do these trigger other cards when fielded abilities or when you field another character abilities? You're moving them to the field, but that's different than the act of fielding them. Just sort of like, you know, paying life is different from, you know, dealing or taking damage. You know what I mean? So that's another aspect to this. Does this count as being fielded? It might, but it might not. And I could see the argument for either one.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I've also got to say, if people are already a little salty about Gabi, this Rally card is ridiculous. It lets you drag all those sidekicks right back out and really changes a lot when you're able to just grab those sidekicks and move them effortlessly from the used pile back onto the field.
Yeah, though I guess it will make Human Torch just as powerful a counter because you can just rally right back and ping those sidekicks off his map.
Yeah, it's true. I think if moving the 2 sidekicks or the 3 counts as fielding 2 or 3 characters, your Human Torch becomes a very interesting character as well.
It's very hard to know exactly what the intent is with that because I think we can make a distinction between doing what this card says and the actual act of fielding your characters, you know, trademark within the game. But yeah, there are a lot of questions that are going to be surrounding this card. And when we see it, hopefully WizKids has made it a little more clear at that point. Maybe there's still time to adjust the card text, or at least, gosh, we just got to get a fact soon. I'm sure their energy is very much focused on the supply issue and trying to cure that. But, we need some clarity on some of these cards because this is certainly not the last one of these that we're going to talk about. Plus, you consider that, you know, 2 shows, we've had to ask questions about both of the cards that are going to be released in the organized play kits. That's concerning, too.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm a little worried about them in general. I think they have the potential to remain balanced cards, but sometimes I look at them and I'm like, wow, in the right situation, that's terrifying.
Well, they're going to shift the meta, and that's cool, because a lot of these games, and it's the reason that in any collectible game, you kind of keep seeing you keep seeing expansions come out. Even if you look at deck building games, my gosh, how many expansions does Dominion come out with? With any of these games, there is going to eventually be some sort of an optimal strategy discovered, so you need to release extra things to shake that out. A card like this can shift where the power is. Again, as we said, it could make Human Torch all of a sudden as viable as, for example, Gabi, or the first one, which, you know, helps boost your characters based on team affiliations, is going to make some of those things more important. So these cards kind of help us shift the meta just a little bit while this set is still active, you know, even, you know, a couple of months before we're going to see any more Dice Masters sets. These games are always evolving for a reason, and that's why I'm cool with collectible games, because something that's optimal right now is not going to be optimal 6 months from now.
Or at least one would hope.
Well, I think this card shows it. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, yes and no, because if you think about it, it is going to promote Gabi a lot. So, and that's already a very strong strategy nowadays. So,
it's going to promote Gabi, but I think it's going to promote a few other cards. There's a lot of cards that interact with sidekicks that aren't going to be exactly the same as, you know, as what Gabi can do. I think we're going to see this develop. I mean, but I think Rally does have the chance to shake it up, because I think it's going to bring a couple of other cards to the forefront.
Yeah, there's definitely a potential there.
Yeah. So, well, that about wraps it up for episode 2 of The Reserve Pool. Please, we'd love to hear you interact with us, whether it's via mailbag@thereservepool.com, whether you're clicking on the little heart by our name at Board Game Links, or commenting on the site, or following us on Twitter, or leaving an iTunes review. So many ways to interact with us, and we do hope you take a few of those to heart and take a little bit of time. We'd love to hear from you. For myself, for Katie, for Evan, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you again in 1 week as we discuss the meta surrounding the action cards. Thanks again. Katie, Evan, anything you want to say before we sign off?
Man, I didn't think about this.
So no. Evan, how about you? Evan?
Bueller?
Did we lose Evan again?
I think we might have.
Hello?
Hello?
There we go. I think my internet was wonky. Either that or I accidentally swapped off my mic.
That's okay. Evan, is there anything you'd like to say before we sign off?
No, actually.
All right, I'm going to just cut the part where I even asked you guys if you did.
I'm so sorry.